Hartmure goes into superstition and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A chap went along to a seance with his wife, and the medium sat there, immediately went into a trance, and after about 10 minutes of this trance, the medium suddenly developed the most hysterical laughter. She was giggling, throwing herself around with laughter, heaving, guffawing, chuckling, chortling, screaming with hysterics. The chap got up from the table and smashed her right in the mouth. His wife said, "What did you do that for?" He said, "I always believe in striking a happy medium." Chap walking along a quiet English country lane, and the chap behind him noticed this fellow in front kept putting his hand to his pocket, into his own pocket, that is, and sprinkling some white powder every few yards. As he walked on a few yards, put his hand in his pocket again, got some white powder, sprinkled it on the path again. About a half a mile, this chap behind walked up and said, "Pardon me," he said, "I couldn't help noticing it. What's that you're doing? What is it?" "Well," he said, that's anti-tiger powder. It kills tigers." So, "My dear chap, this is England. We have no tigers here." Just as well, I don't think it works. A bus conductor has appeared in court charged with witchcraft. The judge said, "Now, what happened exactly?" "Well," she said, "we've got to determine us. I shouted, 'All change,' and the next thing I knew, the bus was full of frogs." A Victorian missionary in the wilds of Africa was determined to replace superstition with solid Victorian Christianity. So, in the first tribe he went to, he persuaded the entire adult population to go through proper Christian marriage ceremonies. "There," he said to the chief when the long task was over, "now, don't you all feel better now you've been through the marriage service?" The chief grinned. "Oh, yes, we've all got new wives." A woman went to a seance to get in touch with her deceased husband, who in life had been a waiter in a big restaurant. The lights were dimmed, the medium went into a trance, and the table began to move. The woman said,
"Fred, Fred, is that you, Fred? Fred, speak to me, Fred, speak to me."
And the boy said, "I can't, that's not my table." A nun was stopped at the customs, and they asked to examine the luggage. "And what's in this bottle, sister?" he said. "It's holy water," she said. "I see." The customs officer looked a bit suspicious and opened the bottle and sniffed it. "I'm sorry, sister, that's not holy water, that's gin."
"Oh, Lord be praised, a miracle."
An old witch doctor from Africa sent his son to England for a holiday, and when he came back, the father said, "What about these English spells and superstitions, you know?" "Oh, yes," said the boy, "yes. They have one marvelous ritual. It is called cricket. A place of sacrifice is prepared with a roller, and 3 juju sticks are dug in the ground at either end. And then 22 men dressed in white come out onto the sacred field. And then 2 more men in white come out bearing the mighty magic bats. Then 1 man take a holy ball and throw it at the juju sticks. The man with the bat miss, the juju stick go flying in the air. All the men hold their hand up to heaven and say, 'Azat!' And then the rain comes pelting down."
Superstition is a strange paradox. It's something that civilizations are always trying to grow out of, but as soon as they get away from one lot of superstitions, they replace them with a new lot. It's as if there's a constant desire for just so much inexplicable belief in our makeup, and ideas always get translated into folklore, in the words of T.H. Huxley.
"It is the customary fate of new truths to begin as heresies and end as superstitions."
And a lot of old superstitions remain unchanged for centuries. There are plenty of people around today who pride themselves on their modern rational approach to life, and yet will touch wood and think twice about walking under a ladder or leaving salt spilled on the table. The need for these observances is very deep-rooted. There's a central weakness in us that requires such rituals. In the words of Edmund Burke,
"Superstition is the religion of feeble minds."
But he also observed that it's not just the feeble-minded who are affected.
"In all superstition, wise men follow fools."
And you... and you can't pretend that the need for it isn't there. Francis Bacon.
"There is a superstition in avoiding superstition."
So, we'll make no attempt to avoid it, but find out some more information from 2 well-known authorities on everything.
course, you know, Pete, all these superstitions and things have their origins in the Black Ages, when people wandered about in a state of ignorance and unrest.
Of course they did, Dad. That was a time when strange spirits were abroad.
Oh, we had some here as well,
actually. Oh, yeah, medieval times.
Yeah, of course. And the pain of the sinister unknown and the fear of Lucifer and the dark spirits was on everybody's heart.
Of course they were, Dad. There's lots of witches about in those days.
Yeah.
Do you know about witches, Dad?
No, I don't, Pete.
In medieval times, when they suspected someone of being a witch, Dad,
yeah,
the villagers used to seize hold of her and get lots of string and tie it all round her and then attach pebbles, what they found in the forest nearby.
Yeah.
And then the elders of the village, or not absolutely the elders because they're too weak to do it,
yeah,
but the youngest of the elders, the sort of...
The Middle Ages,
as they were called, used to grab hold of the alleged witch and thrust her in the pond, you see.
Yeah.
And if she floated, they knew that she was a witch, and they hauled her out and waited for her to dry off and burnt her.
Do you remember Bert Woolley?
No.
See, nobody remembers him. Well, he was in the war. He was in the trenches one day, you know.
Yes.
He was fighting on the front. And he was polishing his rifle one Christmas. And suddenly, he cut his finger on the viewfinder. And you wouldn't believe this, 3,000 miles away in Glasgow, his mum, in the middle of the night, woke up in a cold sweat, sucking her thumb, and saying in a voice that was scarcely her own, Pete, "My little one has been injured. My boy has been damaged." Yeah.
That's telepathy, Dad.
Is it?
That's all it is. That's telepathy. I'm telepathetic, you know. I don't know what people are thinking. For example, you think of something, I'll tell you what you're thinking.
I bet you can't.
Of course I can. Shut your arse and think of something.
Right.
You thought of anything?
No, I can't think of anything.
Well, think of an apple.
All right.
No, don't think of that, because I told you. Think of something similar to that.
I find it hard.
Have you thought of something?
Yeah.
Right. I'll tell you what it is. I believe that you're thinking, "I bet Pete can't tell what I'm thinking."
How did you know that, then?
Pete and Dud. It's amazing how much we consider the influence of luck in our lives. We spend a lot of time wishing each other luck, sending good luck cards and other charms. Here's a useful thing to send to a friend, depending on your friend.
A piece of charmed coal. If a burglar carries this in his pocket, he will be able to defy authority.
That's useful, isn't it? Another from an old proverb.
He that would have good luck in horses must kiss the parson's wife.
On the other hand, he would have good luck with parson's wives should... Oh, no, maybe not. And one from Sir John Milton's Astrologaster, which was published in 1620.
If a man's nose bleeds one drop of the left nostril, it is a sign of good luck, and vice versa.
It's not good luck for the bloke with a nose, is it? The trouble is, people aren't properly schooled in superstitions, so they often don't know what is actually causing their good or bad fortune. A letter from the Sunday Express.
Are goldfish unlucky? A woman I met in a pet shop told me that soon after she bought one, her husband disappeared. Last week, my son brought one home. Since then, our cat, which we've had for several years, has vanished.
Usually it's the other way around, isn't it? You bring a cat home and the goldfish vanishes. Another one, Alfred.
If you meet a squint-eyed person, you must spit 3 times or bad fortune will attend you.
I'll tell you what. If you stand in front of a person who is meeting a squint-eyed person... Of course, one place people are always going for information about their prospects for good or bad luck is the little columns in the newspaper where the stars foretell the future.
Jupiter's passed through Orion and come into conjunction with Mars. Saturn is wheeling through infinite space to its preordained place in the stars, and I gaze at the planets in wonder, at the trouble and time they expend, all to warn me to be careful in dealings involving a friend.
Donald Swan, it's difficult to know what to believe about the stars. I can see that there might be something in it when you have an individual horoscope made up. But the sort of blanket coverage given in the newspapers doesn't just seem a bit dubious. I mean, if every single Taurian were due to get news from abroad on the same day, I mean, how would the postal services cope? Sometimes the advice given by astrological forecasts does seem excessively specific. I suppose there are recognisable zodiacal types, but some of the generalisations about their characters do seem to be a bit sweeping. Here's an anonymous limerick.
If Leo your own birthday marks, you will last until 40 when starts, and you pleasure in stamps, Boy Scouts and their camps, and fondling new statues in parks.
Sure, that's a prediction, isn't it? And yet, in spite of scepticism setting in, there are still many practitioners of superstition around, and some people believe them implicitly. There's a great attraction in the idea of superhuman powers. Certainly they've helped fiction along. Where would some adventure novelists have been without witch doctors capable of curses and magic and feats like reducing someone to 8 inches high when his fiancée is due to arrive from England at any moment?
I don't care, Cartwright. You're just driving yourself into a state of hysteria. Now just stop pacing up and down the mantelpiece. Heaven's sake, pull up that matchbox and sit down.
Doc, what are we going to do?
Well, quite obviously, the first thing, get rid of the cat.
You can't imagine what it's like being only 8 inches tall. Doc, you've got to help me keep this thing quiet.
Hello, Richard. Where are you, darling? It's me, Angela. I've arrived.
Gad, my fiancée.
Oh, hello. You must be Dr. Scobie.
Oh, how do you do?
Richard's written me so much about you. Oh, I say, what's this doll on the mantelpiece? Did you win it at the fairground?
Angela, it's me.
Oh. How very nice to see you, Richard.
And that is what I call good breeding. Geraldine trains them to take practically anything in their stride. Rapidly, I explained position, and Angela, a very sensible girl, ordered tea, and we talked it over.
Well, I will admit it is a bit of a shaker, but, well, these things happen. More tea, Richard. Richard, where are you?
I don't do so.
Silly me. Doctor, would you mind just lifting the tea cozy? Peepo, darling.
Gad, Angela, you've taken this like the brick you are. But, darling, there's something we must consider. Darling, is this going to make any difference to us?
Well, now, as an old medical man, I would like...
Of course not. Of course it won't make any difference.
Yes, but I...
Now, Richard, just don't you worry your little head about it. Doctor, aren't we being a little defeatist about this? I mean, surely there must be some way of bringing him up to his full size.
You mean something like a bicycle pump?
I say, steady on.
I mean, can't we appeal to that witch man? Ask him to lift the curse? I'm sure if he understood how difficult it's going to make our marriage.
How am I going to shake hands with people at the reception? They think I'm just something that's fallen off the wedding cake.
Well, we can try appealing to Ling Tam's better nature. I'll go and get him now. I shan't be long.
Oh, meanwhile, darling, try not to think about it too much. Well, let's just change the subject. Look, I've brought you out the latest gramophone records from home.
Oh, I say, how frightfully good of you. What are they?
Well, it's some new American rock and roll chap. He's called... Oh. Oh, my dear.
Show me. Little Richard.
Jimmy Edwards, Dick Bentley and June Whitfield in a snatch from an old thing called Take It From Here. We always like stories of superstition to be distant, set in an unlikely foreign country or with a tang of folksy unreality. But in fact, they're all round us. And as advances in the study of psychology demonstrate the importance of willpower in the cure of illness, old superstitious remedies don't seem so much sillier than modern ones. If you believe something works, then for certain ailments, it does work. Though some of the old remedies do sound a bit unlikely. Here's Alfred with a list of remedies. To cure a headache,
grasp tightly in the hand some scraped horseradish.
To cure gallstones,
sheep's dung boiled with new milk until dissolved and then taken internally.
Chilblains,
thrash your chilblains with holly, keeping your feet or legs crossed while doing so.
The ague,
wrap a spider in a raisin and swallow it.
And finally, bedwetting.
Children who cannot retain their water can be cured by eating 3 roasted mice.
See how they run. All those were genuine traditional remedies. Of course, some prefer more unusual medical methods. A letter from Picture Post.
All those who wish to be cured of carbuncle, gravel, and whatnot, and who desire luxurious bosoms, broccoli, etc., should lie down on their faces from 7:18 to 7:33 p.m. on June 23rd, the Feast of the Molars, reciting Arca, Arca, Tamburetta, while concentrating in thought on pottery and so on.
That's a marvellous one. I can imagine somebody desiring a luxurious bosom, but broccoli. Another potential source of superstition is the occult. Dabbling with the unknown and trying to make contact with the dead. It's a very serious subject for some people and has proved very useful to them. From the Brighton and Hove Gazette.
During the last few years, Miss Paxton has acted as a spiritual guide to a well-known MP. She explained, "I go into a trance and compose his speeches for him."
By golly, a lot of them sound as though they've been composed, but it's a dangerous business to meddle in. From the Kensington Post.
A woman who claims she is going to have a baby from Venus has puzzled Mr. George King, the leader of the Aetherius Society, which has its headquarters in the Fulham Road. Mr. King said, "I think she's been fiddling about with psychic matters."
Good an excuse as any, isn't it? And there are more practical problems, as this Sunday Express report shows.
A Surrey man applying for new national health spectacles said his old ones had been dematerialized at a spiritualist seance.
Very rare occurrence, or medium rare. There's a tendency for most of us, surrounded by our own superstitions, to laugh at other people for theirs. This is particularly true in international terms. One makes certain assumptions about a nation's customs without any detailed knowledge of the subject, and one is often badly off the mark. That's certainly true in the case of this American film director making a film in Africa.
Fellas, you want to gather around here for just a minute? Guys, I'll give you a little idea of the plot of the thing, you know, in case you need motivations for your parts, whatever. Stoop Ranger's plane crashes in the clearing behind the village, and he wanders around for a couple days. You see, he doesn't know where he is. Maybe he's in friendly land, maybe he's in hostile land. He comes over the knoll back there. He sees you guys doing your fire dance, you see. Well, now, as I say, he doesn't know whether you're friendly, whether you're hostile, but he's just... What's the matter, fellas? You don't have a fire dance. I thought all you clowns had fire dance. How about a rain dance, guys? You have a rain dance of some kind? If it rains, it rains. Well, that's the enlightened way of looking, I suppose. Harry, you want to come up here? Fellas, this is Harry, our choreographer. Harry, you want to take about 10 of these clowns, teach them some kind of fire dance they can do? Just a little time step they can do around the fire, Harry. Okay, while he's working on them... going to need two more guys. All right, this fellow here. And let's take this fellow over here. Fellas, you've probably done this a couple hundred times. It's a trite scene, but we need it. The drums start, the drums stop. You two guys come running in. You set fire to the pile of wood in the center. You two guys run out, and then on come the dancers. Okay, guys? Have you got it? Let's try to get it in one take. I think it'll kind of add a little, you know, informality to it. Okay, you ready? Camera's ready? Okay, drums start. Okay, action. Okay, drums out. You two guys, come running in. That's the way. Set fire. Oh, fellas, hold it a minute. Hold it. Not with your lighters, guys. Wait a minute.
Bob Newhart. The modern superstition is that we're free of superstition, but that doesn't fit the facts. There seem to be as many strange beliefs around now as ever before, at least if the papers are anything to go by, from the Sunday Express.
In Lancashire, it is still believed by many women that if they want to have a male child, their husbands must wear boots at the time of conception.
Here's another one, a letter to a woman's magazine.
I'm expecting my first baby in 2 months from now. We have a little kitten which I'm always playing with, but friends tell me I should not, or my baby will be hairy. Is this true?
And from a letter in the Daily Mail.
All my life I've suffered from very hairy ears. 2 years ago a friend told me that this was because I was a liberal. This so impressed me that I joined the Socialist Party, and now I have very hairy backs to my hands.
Superstition is far from dead. Has it changed a bit in modern times? It's usually born of fear, and now some of the things we fear are different. I'm sure hobgoblins and elves are no sillier than some of the theories held about life in outer space. There's a lot of superstition in the whole business of science fiction.
I wrote a science fiction film, which I'll tell you about. It's 4:10 in the afternoon, and everybody in the world mysteriously falls asleep. Just like that, they're driving cars, whatever they're doing, bang, they go to sleep, the Russians, the Chinese, the Americans, and the whole world sleeps for exactly 1 hour till 4:50. And they wake up at 4:10, and mysteriously, upon awakening, everybody in the world finds themselves in the pants business. Stay with this because it's brilliant. Everybody's making comps and flies and cutting velvet, you know. And a spaceship lands from another planet. And men get out with jackets and shirts and black socks. No trousers at all. And they say, "Are the pants ready?" We say no. Could you come back Thursday?
Woody Allen. I think we'll close the program now with another useful tip from Thomas Nash. This is particularly addressed to those beer drinkers amongst you who are afraid of being given short measure.
The secret that all tapsters will curse me for blabbing. In a red herring's skin there is pure witchcraft. For do but rub a can or quart pot round about the mouth of it, let the cunningest lick spigot swelled his heart out, and beer shall never foam or froth in the cup, whereby to deceive men of their measure, but be as tettled as if it stood all night.
All useful information. Next, Alfred and I will be putting our careers at risk and doing a very dangerous thing indeed, and that's a whole half-hour program on the subject of boredom. So we'll touch wood, keep our fingers crossed, and hope to see you, DV, then. Good day.
Bye.
Frank Nurger's Into Superstition was produced by Simon Brett and John Lloyd.